You're listening to Building the Game with Rob and Jason.
It's Building the Game with Jason and Rob. For tabletop game design, you really can't go wrong. Building the game, yeah, building the game.
Hello and welcome to Building the Game, a documentary podcast. Today it's Monday, June 19th, 2017. You're listening to episode 264. My name's Rob. Jason is here too.
Hey.
Hey. Man, I am armpits deep in a couple of days, 3 days off work. I'm at the halfway point right now, painting my bathroom.
Sounds like so much fun.
I'm covered in little bits of white and yellow paint. I also haven't shaved in a little over a week.
Uh-huh.
So my facial hair is getting pretty ugly at this point. I've reached a point where, and it'd been a while since I trimmed my mustache too, so I'm reaching the point now where whenever I take a sip of a drink from like a glass, it gets filtered through my mustache before it enters my mouth. So it's probably time to trim that a little bit, but I'm kind of putting it off until I have to go back to work.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, that's in 2 days, so.
Yeah, so I'll probably do that on Thursday morning.
Right.
Yeah.
I try and trim the old beard once a week. Yeah. I generally don't. Usually it's once every 2 to 3 weeks.
Yeah.
But like, it's just not remembering because I have to do it before I take a shower because I have so much hair that there's just a lot.
It's going to wash out. You need to wash it out in the shower.
Yeah, it's everywhere otherwise.
Yeah.
Itchy and stuff.
Yeah, so I try and trim the stash every couple of weeks. But I've been lazy.
Fair enough.
I've been lazy. How you doing, man? What's new?
Good. I'm finishing prep for Origins. Prototype mostly made.
So when this episode posts, you will have just come back from Origins.
Yeah.
So how's Origins?
Oh, it was great.
Yeah?
It was great.
Did you have fun?
Quick trip. Lightning trip, yes.
Yeah? Good. Great. So, what was your favorite part?
People buying like 400 copies of my game. That was pretty cool.
That's cool. I didn't know Mark was going to have that many copies. That's great.
Neither did I, but it turns out he did. And they all sold, every single one of them.
Whoa.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Second printing, here we come.
Yeah, that'd be great. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, yeah, let's plan on that.
Nice. I heard you broke your ankle, though. That's too bad.
That's too bad.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, so,
that
but
would
you,
suck.
You seem to be getting around okay today.
Yeah, you know, get one of those wheelie bike things.
That'd
be great.
I've always wanted one of those.
Yeah.
You know, where it's like a little knee scooter.
Right. One of the loan officers downstairs has one right now.
Really?
Yeah.
Those look like so much fun.
Yeah.
Like
except
so
for the
fun.
Fact that you have to like break your leg or ankle or have surgery to get to use it.
Yeah, you know, but whatever.
They are so much better than crutches though, right?
Yeah, right. Right.
I'm just going to wheel around
here. I'm going to look awesome.
Yeah.
I'm going to look awesome on my little knee scooter.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think it looks like fun. I don't know. So, whatever.
I'd want to motorize it. It's basically just drive a motorbike around. That'd be better.
I think they make those. It's called a hover round.
Nice.
Yeah. Yeah. What else you been up to?
We went on vacation last week before we recorded this, so that was good. Good times. Got to go
where'd you go?
The Upper Peninsula of Michigan up to Munising, which is, for anybody who knows Michigan, knows is way up there. Way Lake Superior. Stayed in a house on the shores of good old Lake Superior.
Great.
See the pictured rocks in the distance.
Ooh, beautiful. So,
yeah, it was pretty nice. Stayed up there with some friends, and it was a good time. It was the first Airbnb I've ever did.
Oh, yeah?
Really liked it.
Yeah good.
Kind of spoiled because the people were so nice. The only thing I found that I don't like about Airbnb, and I understand why this is the case, but you pay fully in advance.
Yeah, you do.
And when you're renting a house with six people, hey, that's expensive.
Sure.
So it's a chunk of change to put in your credit card.
Yeah. Yeah.
4 months in advance.
Yeah. I've never done that before at Airbnb, but I've heard that can be unpleasant. And then sometimes if it's not a good experience, too bad.
Right. So they do wait to transfer the money to the person renting.
Oh, okay.
The night after your first night. So basically you get a chance to go make sure the place isn't haunted, I guess, or something, whatever, you know.
Oh man, if it was haunted, I would want to go that much more.
Right. That's true. But, they do that, but the bonus is like having paid off the debt of that months ago. It was kind of nice to our trip was rather inexpensive.
Yeah, already paid for. That's cool. So, that's good. Yeah.
But if something had to change and the schedule had to change and they could not accommodate that, you're kind of screwed.
Yeah. So,
but these people were really nice and I liked it a lot. And they didn't stay there. Like sometimes it's like they rent a room to you, but they rented us their whole house.
Okay.
They must have had another house locally because they were nearby and they responded to text messages. It was great.
So. They were just watching.
Yes.
At all times.
Yeah, probably. Yeah. So.
Peeking in through the windows.
He did just, he like explained, over explained a lot of things to us. Like, I was like, hey, do I just put the garbage in the garage once it, you know, the bags when they're full? Because I'm assuming I can't put them outside. I know she'd have anything outside because of the bears, right? He's like, yes, please put it in the garage. He says, hey, if it's dripping, could you take the garbage bag out the deck and around the house and back into the garage?
Instead of through the house?
Yeah, like, I feel like that probably didn't need to be explained to me. Like, well, I'm not a savage, but then again, as my friend Ro pointed out, hey, maybe some of the people that have stayed here have not been so considerate.
Yeah.
So considerate. Like, what are we, barbarians?
Yeah, sure. Yeah, well, I'm sure. He probably felt like he has to say that because it's been a problem more than once.
Yeah, that's what's terrifying, right?
Realistically.
That's true. So, So he had in his garage, he had one of those, like, I think it's a mat for cleaning off your feet, like your shoes.
Mm-hmm.
So basically, it's a mat with a bunch of spikes on it, right?
Sure.
Like, spikes that feel not awesome when you go out barefoot and step on it like full weight because you don't notice it because it was black. So just blend it in. And I'd went in and out of the garage several times, but I had shoes on, right? So I just go out there to throw the garbage bag, step on it, and immediately I'm like, oh, like super loud to the point where Steph is like, are you okay out there? Like,
did you hurt yourself so much that you get a little knee scooter?
I didn't, unfortunately. Aww. Yeah. Man. But for about 2 minutes, it hurt really bad. It didn't break the skin, thankfully.
Thankfully.
Because it could have. Like, I mean, these things are sharp, but...
It's basically a bed of nails you just stepped on.
Basically, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So anyways, yeah, watched out for that after that.
Okay, yeah.
But no, the house was awesome, and we got to have some fires outside at nights, and...
Good.
Didn't see any bears, so that's too bad, but it's always nice when you can see a bear.
Yeah.
So, you know, from a distance.
Bears are cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. Right on.
So, yeah.
Yeah.
So, are we going to talk about something? Or do you have stuff you need to talk about first?
I played Warhammer 40K.
Oh, did you?
Yeah.
With who?
With Arden.
Oh, is he into that?
He is getting into that.
Oh,
is he? Our friend Arden.
Is it Warhammer Tantalcore Edition?
No. No, it's not. It's Warhammer 40K. Yeah, he's always said he's always been really interested in it, but never really had anybody to play it with. And he and I were talking about that one day, and I said, "Well, dude, you know, I have also always been interested in it, and never had anybody to play with, and also didn't want to invest the money in it, right? Because
so if you invest the money, bro, I'll play with you."
Well, so that was a conversation we had, and then like 2 weeks later, he texted me a picture of all of the stuff that he had bought. And then over the winter, he painted a bunch of minis and got a bunch of stuff together. And so this past weekend, we played 40K.
Just you and him, or did Christine play?
Just two of us, yeah. We did a one-on-one battle. He was some kind of anime-style robot army.
That does not surprise me.
And I was some kind of cyborg monster army thing, which also is kind of in line with my tastes.
Yeah.
It was fun. So, like, the only thing I have to compare it to is BattleTech, because I used to play a lot of BattleTech.
Mm-hmm.
I'm wearing my BattleTech T-shirt today.
Dude, I have to. That is a sweet BattleTech T-shirt. Because so it passes first qualification.
Yeah.
It does not say BattleTech anywhere on the shirt, right?
Right.
Because that's not cool.
Yeah.
It's cool if it doesn't. But it's got all the little dots in it.
Yeah.
For damage, right?
Yeah.
And I love that.
Yeah. It's for builders who can't see this. It's the basically the damage allocation diagram for front. On the front of the t-shirt, it has the front. On the back of the t-shirt, it has the back.
Yeah.
Just like on the character sheet.
And it's amazing.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. I really got that at Gen Con last year, I think. Anyway, so...
really? I didn't know that.
It was either last year or the year before. I don't recall exactly. But yeah, it did come from Gen Con. So it's got... So that's the only thing I have really to compare it to. Because I don't want to compare it to one of the Clix games or something like that, you know?
Right.
Any of those sorts of blind packed booster mini game things, because those are totally different animals.
Oh yeah, totally.
Yeah. So it was cool, and it's very strategy focused, right?
For sure.
But it's also super cumbersome. Like, you know, if you want to shoot somebody, first thing you have to do is you have to measure distance, which is whatever, that's fine. Then you look at the character reference card thing. And, mm-hmm. And I should say, with Warhammer, you have models and units. And each individual mini is called a model, and then they're grouped together in units. And units move as units.
Oh, okay.
Okay? And then, you know, if you're thinking just normal level troops, then then with hit points in a unit, every model in a unit is one hit point, right? So if somebody attacks your unit and does 3 damage, that means you're going to remove 3 models from the unit. Okay, that's easy. Right? And bigger units, or excuse me, bigger models have their own individual hit points that you have to keep track of. And that mm-hmm. means you have little dice and stuff to just put on their base. Okay, so let's say your unit wants to attack another unit. You've measured range. You're good to go. Next thing you need to do is because each individual model can be configured in different ways. So you buy the models that are on the sprue, and then you know, if you're going to have a unit of 10, you might want to have 6 that have this weapon and 4 that have this other weapon, and the last guy to have some kind of really long range thing, whatever. And based on which one you want to use, which weapon you want to use, you glue a different gun onto the model when you're assembling them. Which is crazy, right? I mean, that's awesome.
But that's commitment, right?
But that's super commitment. That also means you need to have all of those stats on every on that unit's card, and you have to differentiate between them. Okay. So if you're going to attack, and let's just assume, first of all, that all 10 models in the unit all have the same weapons. Okay, we'll keep it easy. So you measure your distance, you're good. Then you roll 1 die for each one against your basically your attack bonus. And if you meet or exceed that, congrats, you hit. Okay. Next thing you have to do is then you have to see how of those things that hit, how many wounded your opponent. So you compare your wounding power to their toughness power, or maybe, I'm sorry, it's your strength power to their toughness power, and you do a calculation there, and then you roll those dice again to see how many hits turn into wounds. And then after you determine wounds, then you have to give those dice to your opponent so they can roll that against their other stat. I don't remember what it was now, to see how many wounds actually make it through and do damage.
Like constitution or armor or something.
Something like that. I think maybe it was armor. I don't remember exactly. Anyway, and so for every combat interaction, you're going to roll at least 3 times.
That sounds so cumbersome.
Which is a lot. Oh, man, that's a lot.
That's not for me.
And so we got through the whole game, and we were probably playing for about 4 hours. For a one-on-one battle, and you know, I don't know how many models we had, but we probably each had I started with 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 units, each made up of multiple models. No, some are 7 units, and he probably had comparable number anyway. Point value, I don't know what the total point values were, but they're fairly comparable armies. Played it, took about 4 hours. Now, it was the first time playing for both of us. And it was fun, but it was a lot.
Yeah, that sounds.
Yeah. And so we were playing with new rules, because I guess in a couple of weeks they're publishing official new rule books with simplified rules, and we were already playing with the simplified rules.
That didn't sound simplified.
It wasn't. I mean, maybe it was. Maybe it was a lot simpler than it used to be. According to what Arden was telling me, he's read both rule sets, and this is a lot simpler.
Wow.
And it's still. More than I'm really comfortable with.
That's where I think something like a D&D minis really excels, because it's like, to do a ranged attack, it's in the general ranged attack are, can I see you? Yes, I can hit you, right? The big thing with that is you can only hit the person in front, mm-hmm. right? You have to aim at the closest target.
Mm-hmm.
But there are some people like range 6, so you count 6 squares out, right?
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, that's not that typical. And damage is simple, right? I hit you. This is how much damage I deal. Unless you have some special ability that negates some of that, but that's pretty uncommon, right? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It was, you know, and you can play a skirmish with that where each of us have 10 characters in 45 minutes, mm-hmm. 60 at the worst, right?
Sure.
So,
and if we had both played it a bunch, and I wasn't getting completely confused every time I had to roll dice mm-hmm. about what the math was telling me to do, it probably would have taken us half that, honestly.
Fair enough, but still, you know, 2 hours. That's, I mean,
it's a lot. It's a lot. I mean, it's a different. It's that style of game. That's how the game works.
No, and
right?
I know some people are super into that.
Yeah,
but it's a bit much for me. Yeah,
Yeah.
Some people really just like painting the minis and stuff too.
Yeah. So, I mean, I had a lot of fun. But I think I would have had fun hanging out with a friend anyway.
Right.
Right. Yeah. Regardless of what
you didn't
we were
have fun because you were playing the game.
Yeah. So, but I'll certainly play it again with him. I'm happy to do that. But it was an experience enough to tell me that I don't feel like I need to go out and buy my own minis, you know?
Right. 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 So, that's good.
Yeah. But yeah, so, Warhammer 40K.
Cool.
I love that universe though. All the fiction they've written around the universe super cool. Yeah. Yeah. Anyway.
And way less complicated than the rules still, probably.
Well, I don't know. It's a pretty dense universe of fiction that created
it. It is.
Yeah.
So.
Anyway.
All right. So for a topic this week.
Yeah.
We're going to talk about, and this is something that's near and dear to you and I of late, is what should you do as a game designer? What, you know, despite what the publisher may tell you, like in general, what do we feel like you should do as a game designer to support your game once it's published? Now, this is assuming you didn't self-publish it, because if you did self-publish it, everything is what you should be doing. Yeah. Everything. But this is for, hey, I did the game. I made the game. Mm-hmm. It was published by someone else. What should I do to support it now that it's out in the wild, right?
And
Suda Tycoon came out, oh gosh, almost a year ago now.
Gen Con last year.
Yeah. So, Unreal Estate just came out. It's making its Origins debut. It's in some backers' hands now. It should, by the time people are hearing this, most backers should have it. Mm-hmm. Although I guess that Mark had to take a break for Origins. So, I think he's sent out everything he's going to at this point, and then more will happen after Origins.
Sure.
He's
got a lot going on.
Yeah. Well, yeah. I mean, and he can't miss the chance to go to Origins because it's a chance to get the game out there more, right? So it's important. Most backers understand that. So very few have trouble with that sort of thing. It used to be like, you better not sell that game anywhere before.
Yeah, no, people get it.
But yeah,
people understand how business works.
So we're talking about what you should do to help your game out once it's out there. Mm-hmm. I'm going to read a couple tweets before we start, just to kind of set the stage.
Sure.
There's two here from Seth Jaffe. Seth says, I like to monitor the BGG rules forums to make sure everyone with questions can get accurate answers as quickly as possible. I love that. I wish I was better at that. But that is something that I do try and watch with Unreal Estate. I think I have it flagged maybe so that I get notifications when anyone does anything.
Yeah.
Because they'll send me an email, right? That's how that works?
It depends on your settings. I just have it so that it pops up an alert whenever I log in.
Oh, gosh. Yeah, I need to log in more often then.
Yeah. I don't know. I don't get email notifications personally. Right.
I also know that Mark watches it very closely, but...
yeah.
But I have been able to answer a couple questions. Seth says, if you're a Twitter personality, then tweet and get on all your friends' podcasts and talk about it like it's the second coming. also good advice.
Yeah.
And then Ben Pinchback says, do the play with designer events at Origins and Gen Con, etc. So there's a place to start. So something interesting I want to say about what Ben said.
Yeah.
Doing the play with the designer events. So I did a little bit of that this weekend. We had a release party at Out of the Box in Kentwood in Grand Rapids.
Mm-hmm.
Mark asked if I could go up and sign some copies, and I got to do that, and I got to teach a couple people how to play the game. Super fun. I got to play the game. It's actually been quite a while since I've played the game as well. So we had a great time doing that. But when Mark had originally asked me, when it came to Gen Con and Origins, what would you rather do? Would you rather work in the booth or demo the game? I actually picked work in the booth. And I didn't pick that because I don't like playing my game with people, because I love playing my game with people. But so this is why I picked it. And I said this to Mark, and Mark felt like it was sound logic. I said, anyone can teach you how to play this game. It's not a complicated game, right? They certainly don't need to play with me to learn how to play. But I can sell this game to people. As the designer, I'm passionate about it. I know about it. I can talk it up. I feel like I'm better suited to be in the booth, you know, offering to sign copies, trying to help get it out there.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm just curious what your thoughts are on that.
Yeah, it's an interesting thought. Thinking back to Gen Con last year with Saloon Tycoon. So I ran games in the demo area at Gen Con of Saloon Tycoon. And AJ had a bunch of volunteers there helping people get started. But at one point, I think I was running six games at the same time, which was pretty crazy.
Yeah.
But I ran a batch of games every day, three of the 4 days. So Thursday, Friday, Saturday.
Mm-hmm.
And that was super fun. It was fun to get people started, to explain the rules, to be available for questions, that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And then it was on Sunday that I spent about an hour. It was about an hour actually at the booth trying to talk to people about the game.
Mm-hmm.
And I kind of liked being at the booth better. And I think kind of for that similar reason that you said, that I like talking about the game.
Right.
And yeah, so Saloon Tycoon is quite a bit more complex than Unreal Estate. So
to say the least, yes.
Yeah, to say the least. And so there was a lot of value in me being there to run those games.
Right.
Because, yeah, I mean, I'm not going to say the volunteers weren't fully capable of doing so, but even they occasionally had questions for me about
right.
things.
Yeah, I know. And it was, I mean, some of the volunteers were like Nate, who'd played it many times,
yeah,
but
sure.
still he had questions and there you were.
Right, yeah. So there was a lot of value in me doing that. And I'm going to do that again this year, Gen Con. I'll be running several games for those guys.
Cool.
I think again, I'm going to be running a batch of games every day, Thursday, right. Friday, Saturday. That's the plan anyway. In terms of other support for the game, yeah, like I kind of already said, yeah, I subscribe to Saloon Tycoon and now to the Ranch expansion on BGG. So I get an alert every time I log in. When the Kickstarters are going, I'm basically looking at BGG like three times a day.
Right. Likewise, and I did do that when Unreal Estate was out there too, to try and hit up questions right away.
Yeah. Likewise, after Saloon Tycoon was released, I would say I was still checking it three times a day for the first 4 or 5 months after that game came out. And I was still looking at it at least once a day during the week. Can't always check it on the weekends.
Right.
AJ and Evan are so quick on the draw and so looking out for that stuff that in most cases they got to questions before I did.
Wow. And I know, like I said, Mark has been really quick about.
Yeah.
But there have even been times when Mark has said, hey, Jason, there's a rules question. Clarify this for me. Because yeah. he's like, because he actually genuinely wants to know what I think.
Sure.
Right?
Sure.
Because it's my game.
Sure.
Even though he's completely cool for him to say, this is how I interpret it.
Yeah.
Even
yeah.
though, he's the publisher. Whatever he says, daddy gets. Right?
Yeah. To that end, though, we haven't had a ton of rules questions about the core game. Most of the questions that we get about Tycoon are around the expansion tiles and the expansion pieces, the extra tiles, the extra characters, and kind of how they interact and things. And that's stuff that I don't feel like the expert on because I worked so closely with AJ and Evan on that. And in fact, frankly, some of those things were 100% those guys came out of their heads, and I don't want to take any credit for a lot of that.
And that has to happen during the Kickstarter, right? Because you're not there the whole time to be designing new stuff.
Yeah.
You know?
And I think that speaks to kind of the stuff that we've talked about before, where the base game is the base game and expansions are fun and silly. But there's always a risk that they're going to screw with the rules a little bit. They might screw with balance a little bit here and there. And that's okay. That's okay. I mean, that's why it's an expansion. That's not why it's part of the core.
Well, and expansions are meant to stretch the game in a different way.
Sure.
Right.
Right.
We have the one expansion out right now for Unreal Estate, the Gothic Estates. Right. And like the Haunted Caravan in that completely changes the way you score, right?
Sure.
Because it's a simple change, but it's still like if you're like as a player, like I like the expansion, but that card annoys me, right? Because like now I can't use my standard plan that I had, right? But it just makes me play differently, right?
Mm-hmm.
Which is the whole point of an expansion is you have to tweak your strategy, and that's the idea is replayability, right?
Yeah, I don't want to ever play with that card, by the way.
No.
No, because I don't want to have to think in a different way.
Right. That's fair enough. So
I'm lazy.
Yeah, I know that's I've thought about that card actually in a lot of games when I've played. Like if this card was out right now, hey, that's not so bad. But there's other times like if this card was out right now, I'd want to throw stuff. Like what it would mean is I'd have to wait an extra turn to score, so I had crap in my hand to get rid of.
Mm-hmm.
But it does make it interesting for paying attention to what the person to your left has, because you're going to be giving them a free card and how that's going to work. And so anyways, So it sounds like you feel the same way about the booth stuff, which is interesting to me. I actually thought you would say the opposite.
Well, so I think from the publisher's perspective, he clearly sees more value in me being out there demoing the game.
Right.
For my own personal enjoyment factor, I really like to stand there at the booth and chatting with people about the game. And
right.
Yeah, that was fun.
There's so, I mean, the whole, like, this sounds bad when I say it this way, but the whole goal, right, is to sell copies of the game, right? I mean, that's why you're doing the demos even, right?
Of course, yeah.
You want to share your game with people, but sure. If you want to share your game with friends, you'll bring a copy over and you don't care if they buy it or not, right?
Yeah.
But when you're at a convention, the point is to share with people so that they'll buy a copy, right?
Well, yeah.
And people can say, I'm going to go pick that up. But unless they go pick it up and come back and ask you to sign it, you have no way to know, right?
Sure.
But when you're in the booth and they buy a copy, right?
Maybe that's what I liked about it. Maybe it was that little bit of rewarding.
It's that instant gratification, right?
That's, yeah.
They just bought my game.
Yeah, like, that's probably it. You're right.
So to me, that's like, I filled in for Katarsky for like 10 minutes at a booth and sold like 2 copies of his game.
Yeah.
Because I don't remember, I think it was Walk on Fire. So it was a game I'm super excited about.
Yeah.
So I did a good job of selling it because I was excited about it.
Yeah.
And I felt awesome. Like, boom, boom, I'm selling games. And like, I'm not even getting anything out of that. It's just like, it's just fun to get that gratification.
A little endorphin rush or something. Yeah,
right?
Yeah. So yeah, that's probably why I liked being at the booth a little bit better, even though I only did it for a short time.
No, I think that makes sense. So we'll see what it's like for me at Origins.
Sure.
I'll be at the booth quite a bit with Corinne because Mark really wants us both there so that we can sign together, and she'll do little box doodles and stuff. Mm-hmm. You know, I can't do that. So
yeah.
Box doodle is kind of my name, which just looks like a really crappy drawing
sure.
of the words Jason and Slingerland. You can't really read it, though. That's what sucks when you have to sign stuff and you have a really long last name. You just have to fake it,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
Like
SL Squiggle.
Because I used to do that, right? But then I thought, I want it to at least resemble my name. So actually, I do S-L-G-D, because it gets the highs and the lows.
Yeah.
And then sometimes I put a dot in there. I'll just put a dot over the G.
To pretend.
Like,
pretend
look, like,
to
oh, there's an I in there. The I's in there, right? Usually, I don't.
Uh-huh.
But I figure that way you can tell, right? In Jason, I just do J-squiggle.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I basically do J-N.
Mm-hmm.
Like, and that looks like enough like my
Whatever.
Name. So.
Yeah. Yeah, my signature for the last 20 years of my life has just been R-T-C-H.
Oh, really?
Yeah, that's all I do. I do RTCH.
Nice.
Yeah.
That's funny. Because, what I mean, yeah, what's the point?
What's the
I
point?
I saw somebody at work signature today, and it literally was the first initial and just a line.
Yeah, that's pretty
good.
I was
like, wow, you didn't even care about the second, like, your last name.
Yeah. Signatures are fun.
Well, we also have the benefit of, like Seth said, go on podcasts. Hey, guess what? We already have a podcast and we can talk about our stuff as much as we want because it's our podcast.
Yeah, totally.
So that doesn't hurt. Mm-hmm. And I think for us, the way we support the games that helps us is when we don't just talk about our games so people will buy them, right? We talk about our games as our passion and as
learning
our
experience.
Right. So people feel that journey. And therefore, they want to support that. They want to be part of it.
I hope they do.
Well, from what we've seen, I feel it's pretty safe saying that with how well our Kickstarters have done. So anyways, yeah, I feel really good about that because I feel like, you know, we're having an effect right there.
Mm-hmm.
But Ben Pinchback says you should play as the designer. I've never seen Ben work in a booth, but looking at the people who've published him, it doesn't really surprise me, right? It's a lot of bigger publishers.
Mm-hmm.
Unless he ever, maybe he worked at the Dice Hate Me booth sometime. I you know what? I think at Origins, I think he did, actually.
Yeah, I don't know, maybe. I mean, I see those guys everywhere at shows all the time.
Right.
They're always hustling. So.
Yeah, they are. Yeah, yeah,
yeah.
I mean, heck, even at Unpub, like Matt taught us how to play the
Ladder 49.
Ladder 49, yeah. Which I fell in love with immediately. So, yeah. Like, you know, so he was doing a good job. Yeah, mm-hmm. So anyways, yeah, those are my thoughts on that. I don't know if you have other thoughts about...
No, I mean, I think what Ben and Seth said is probably the best advice, you know, which kind of comes down to keep your eyes and ears open for every opportunity to talk about your game.
Right. And really remember that, like, look at it this way, like... You're going to talk about it a lot, trying to get a publisher to get it.
Yeah.
You're going to get a break, right?
Mm-hmm.
Then you're going to need to talk about it a lot when it's on Kickstarter.
Right.
And you can have a break.
Yeah.
But once that game comes out, that is the second most important time to talk about it, right?
Yeah.
The first is a Kickstarter. It just is, because you got to get it.
Right.
You want the Kickstarter to do well, and you want to create press for your game.
Yep.
But, you know, once that game is out, the cool difference is you now have a tangible product, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's not just cool artwork that you see on a Kickstarter page, right? It's a real game.
Right.
And that's awesome.
Yep.
So,
All right. You need to pitch a game.
I do. Sorry, we had a tweet. I was making sure that it was questions for next episode. It's not It's not comments about this, and I don't want to miss that. But thank you, Seth. Thank you, Ben, for taking the time to give us some thoughts on that.
Definitely.
All right. I'm going to pitch a game. So
do that.
So a couple things, and this is a fairly complex game, but a super simple pitch. So we'll just talk through it a bit. I'm going to talk about how I got there. So I wanted for a while, we've talked about wanting to do something else in the world of Unreal Estate, right? I like the world that has come out of this between the artwork and Guildmore, the city, and you know, the things that Mark and Heather have talked about with it. Those have really spoken to me, and I've wanted to do more with that. And, so just to be clear, this is not something Mark is publishing. I mean, he could if he wanted to, Mark, but no, but this isn't, you know, this is just, so I've been working on different ideas and a lot of them, it's not that they weren't panning out, it's that I was getting stuck. And I really, sometimes as a designer, you're just looking for something easy, right? Like you just want an easy design.
Mm-hmm.
And in this case, it was funny because I was able to go back to an old design, realize that it fit very well with Unreal Estate, and it's actually a more complex game, but because I'd already done all the heavy lifting before, I got to do just the fun parts, right? Coming up with powers and stuff. So that's exciting. So what I did was I went back and looked at Sandbox Showdown.
Yay!
Yeah. So which was a game you and I really enjoyed playing together. That's still one of the things. I think it's still one of my best designs.
I agree.
But it was a big box two-player game, and it just wasn't. it just wasn't. Marketable, right?
Sure.
Some people really like the theme. I got really close to the publisher. I think at this point I can talk about this. With Phil from Fifth Street, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. He played it. He loved it. He wanted me to make a bunch of changes. I did. He tried it again. He thought it was cool. And then his company went bankrupt. So, and he never made any offers to me or anything, but I feel like we were headed in a good direction, right?
Yeah, I was bummed when that all petered out.
I was too.
I'm sure you were more than me.
but the cool thing is, he taught me some things about the game. There was some feedback he gave me that I changed with goals and stuff that I didn't like,
mm-hmm.
but there was a couple core pieces, which one of them was, he said, you know, at that point it was toys, right? He said, you've got all these toys, but you only have four factions of toys. And I'd come up with two more, so I was up to six. But he's like, what's fun are these factions of toys? And if each one was a toy line, that would be really cool. And so what I ended up doing was making the factions smaller and making tons of them,
mm-hmm.
because that allowed me to have like more interesting pieces. And for a company like his, that was perfect, right? That's exactly the type of feel he was going for.
Sure.
So I wanted to because I love that so much. I wanted to translate that into the Unreal Estate version of this game. And I was just thinking about, you know, you're kind of building a city now, right? Instead of having these toys in a sandbox, you're building Guildmore. And some of the buildings can move, right? Because of magic and such, right? And some get destroyed and torn down and that sort of thing. So here's kind of the process I went through with that. I took Sandbox Showdown and I had to go back and look really hard because this was pre-Google Drive, Jason. So I actually had to transpose all the data over to Google Drive.
Yeah.
Right. So I uploaded the data, got it all worked out so that I had a Google Sheet that I could really look at with. So what I did was I took all the old powers because they come up with like 30 powers, right? So I took all those old powers and looked at the ones I liked, looked at the ones I hated, and then I kind of matched them up to buildings in Unreal Estate, right? Because with Unreal Estate, like, I didn't want to not use some of the original art, right? So, and we currently have 25 pieces of original art for that gate world. I had no idea there were so many.
It's a lot.
I don't know if even people have ever seen all of them, but they're all there. They're all out there. So I took those 25 pieces and I assigned those out, right, mm-hmm. with powers. And then I came up with 23 more. Because I wanted to have 48 different tiles, and then just double that to 96, right? Mm-hmm. So here's how the game works. And right now I'm calling it Unreal Estate Conquest because I kind of like that, like, you know, it's like a conquest, and that name may suck, I don't know, but right now it's ringing my bell, so it's working, right? So the idea of in the game is, like I said, you're trying to build, and This time I thought I'm going to try and incorporate some familiarity from Unreal Estate, not just the art. So you've got a board in front of you, and it's a 5x5 board with one slot in front of you. So it's a squares. Sorry, it's a 5x5 squares is what I mean by that. And then you have a sixth square right in front of you. So the straight down the middle, seven long, right? And that's your starting square. That's where you're going to put your first building.
Okay.
And then the idea of the game is simple. You want to control the most space at the end of the game. It's pure area control. Okay. And controlling space is done in two ways. Having something there, like having a building there, or having an area cornered, right? So if I say I had a row, a straight line across, and you aren't past it, and I control all the area, I control all that area, right? So mm-hmm. I could have 10 squares blocked off. They're mine. You get one guy in there, boom, no, right? I don't own any of the empty spaces. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I'm with you.
Cool, okay. And I know it helps because you've played the original version before. Mm-hmm. But I wanted to explore the idea of factions. And I had always wanted the, I always liked the idea of your faction being able to do something. So with the toy lines, when I was working on Sandbox Showdown, the idea was that each toy line had kind of a special set of powers, right? Now the issue with that, well, that worked really well when you had goals, right? But when you're just trying to do area control, that doesn't work so great. Mm-hmm. Because too specific with guys' powers ends up meaning that if I put two people together, I'm going to lose every time, right?
Yeah, just to make sure builders are with us here. So the original Sandbox Showdown was just, again, area control. Mm-hmm. One of the things that Phil asked you to add to it was objectives.
Objectives, yes. Yeah. So right, like claim this area or do this or do that. And
right. Which I never liked that.
That was a change I made for a publisher because they were looking at it.
Yeah.
I would have never done that on my own. And immediately, as soon as I got it back, I took it out.
Yeah, right. Okay.
So you've got factions, and with Unreal Estate, I was thinking about like people who live in the city, right? Like, and I was thinking about just doing archetypes, right, of people, mm-hmm. like, you know, a paladin, a warrior. And so that's what I did for the factions. And each faction has four buildings of their own, and they have two copies of each. Mm-hmm. So each, as a faction person, I have a power. And then my buildings each have a unique power. And right now the idea is that when I play, I put three factions together and that is going to be my teams, right? So the idea being that I have now three power cards, this is a spot where we'll come back to that.
Okay.
How that's going to work. There are two types of powers in the game. There's active and passive, right? Active is you take an action on your turn to use it. Each turn you are allowed to place two tiles and get two actions. Okay. There's also passive actions, which are just always in effect. As long as the tile is there, it's in effect. Maybe it's, or when you play the tile, it has X effect, right? Mm-hmm. So it doesn't cost you an action to do it. It costs you a play of the tile.
Okay.
Follow me?
Yep.
Great. Some of those actions are based on moving. Some of those actions are based on destroying. Some of those actions are just based on manipulating the game field, right? Like I said, there's 48 unique powers on each of the buildings, and then there is an additional 12 unique powers on the characters, right?
So it's each one has powers.
It is. One of my favorite things, though, is, of course, coming up with powers.
Sure.
So that in the nice thing was I already had about 25, I think I was able to steal from the old game.
Hmm.
And then I was able to add in new powers to try to round out those powers, right?
Okay.
Like, and because I'd played Sandbox Showdown so many times, it was very easy for me to say, what was fun in the game? What do I want to do more of? How do I want to break a rule? Or mm-hmm. there were some powers I looked and was like, that power was always terrible. I'm going to get rid of it. Right. Mm-hmm. So in the way the game works, to kind of walk you through a turn, is at the beginning of the game, you pick your three factions and you take those tiles, turn them over, shuffle them up, put them face down in a draw stack. Then you're going to deal out five tiles on your proposal board, just like you would on Unreal Estate.
Hey,
why not just reuse names?
Sure.
Right? So the five tiles in your proposal board. Now I should note that you can tell what faction tile it is by the back as well.
Okay.
So when I look at my draw stack, I know what I'm going to draw next. I know that it's from one of the three which faction it's from.
Okay.
I don't know what tile it is. I might be able to figure that out based on.
So you and your opponent could have tiles from the same faction.
No. So because there are eight tiles in each faction, right? So at the start of the game, we're going to shuffle up the cards. Either or, I think for the base game, I'll probably have specific combinations to suggest. When you first start playing, use these three characters together.
Okay.
As you become more advanced, you may want to pick, right? Take turns drafting which character you want, right?
Okay.
Does that make sense?
Yeah.
In the beginning of the game, you're going to get those three. So you have your three unique factions. On each tile, which is a building or something like that, you'll have your faction logo, the type of tile it is, which I'll get back to in a second, the artwork, and then the ability, and whether the ability is active or passive, right?
Okay.
Right now, the prototype is 1.5-inch tiles. I would want, in a production copy, 2-inch tiles, which is what Sandbox Showdown had. It makes them real easy to read. You can really see the artwork. It's a lot of fun. So on your turn, you're going to take 2 tiles off your proposal board and play them onto the playing area. Okay. And any tile you place, unless the tile allows you to break that rule, must be touching a previous tile that you had adjacent to it, right? So adjacent in this game is diagonal and orthogonal, right? So anywhere around those, 8 squares around it,
yeah,
you're covered in.
Okay.
So that said, the same thing goes for if someone's playing. So if there's a diagonal, someone can play through a diagonal to place a tile behind your lines,
sure,
if it's open. And that's kind of done on purpose because it makes it harder to block off areas. You really have to work for that.
Yeah.
And then at the end of your turn, you're going to replenish your proposal board. Any tiles that are destroyed are going to go to your scrap pile, and they will stay in a specific order for the order that they're destroyed. Because some characters can bring back things from the scrap pile.
Okay.
Some characters use effects to do things to their scrap pile. That's the main gist of how the game would play, right?
Okay.
A lot of the complexity obviously comes through the different powers and the actions that you can take, right? So here's something I'm struggling with. Do you understand the whole game?
I think so.
And the game would end when one player can't make a legal tile placement. On their turn, okay, when they would be forced to, and they can't, right?
Mm-hmm.
Or when the board is full, right? Which is basically the same thing, right? Or if somebody runs out of tiles. If I don't have any tiles to play on my turn, I'm done.
Sure.
Okay? And the forcing you to play 2 a turn means that most games should end after 12 turns, because there's 24 tiles in your decks, in your deck. And, so that makes sense. There are ways to avoid playing tiles on a turn. Some character powers allow you to choose to not play tiles to take a powerful action. I kind of did what Seth Jaffe had explained to you one time previously that you do now with a lot of your games, which is you break down the base cost of something, right?
Mm-hmm.
So for this game, it's a little tricky because different powers have different costs. But what I kind of broke it down to was playing 2 tiles is equal to taking 1 action. Because the actions can be a lot more powerful than just dropping tiles down. So to take an extra action, one of the characters has to not play any tiles, right?
Mm-hmm.
But to play an extra tile, they just have to then give up an action, right? So one character can give up an action to play an extra tile, right? Whereas another could not play any tiles to take an extra action. Does that make sense? So that's kind of the base pricing, sure, in the game. So one other thing I want to point out about the game, and then I'll talk about where I'm stuck at. One of the other things in the game is there are 3 types of tiles I mentioned. So there's coins, magic, and nature, right? So those are the 3 tiles. Now, the reason I did that was because other things I'm trying to manage brokenness, I guess, right? Of things being too powerful. Like if I can destroy any tile, if this tile can destroy any tile, and that tile can destroy any tile, they're both pretty powerful, right?
Yeah.
But this tile can only destroy coin tiles, right? And that tile can only destroy nature tiles, right? Or this one can move nature tiles, or it can move magic tiles, right? So I use that as a way to increase complexity of powers, right? Because there is at least one character, sure, that can blow up a nature tile, a coin tile, or, you know, and a magic tile, and in movement it works the same.
Sure. And I'm assuming each faction has a kind of a native type with that.
Yes. So each faction will have 2 of one and 1 of each other one, because they have 4 tiles. Okay. So, right. So like a druid has 2 natures, a magic and a coin, right? Okay. A thief has 2 coins, a magic and a... So everybody's always balanced to where they have at least 1 of each, but they're always going to have 2 of one.
Gotcha.
And most characters have at least 2 active abilities, 2 to 3 active abilities and 1 passive. Everybody has at least 1 passive. There's 1 character who has 3 passives and 1 active. I think that's the warrior, which is funny. But the warrior also has a power that he can use if he's not taking other actions, so it actually works out well.
Mm-hmm.
The biggest thing the game is going to need is balancing of the powers, right?
Sure.
And that was Sandbox Showdown. I mean, I probably played that game 100 times with people at work and with you and other friends, just getting the balancing right.
Yeah.
So I know that'll be an uphill battle with this, right? But I'm also really excited because I know that the base game works, right? Like, I know the concept is fun. It's just making sure that the balance is there. Mm-hmm. So the part where I'm stuck a little bit on is simply the way you use your characters. I don't think I want you... So there are a couple options. One is, at the beginning of the game, you just get all three characters, and you can always use one of their powers. That seems a little overpowered to me, and it also introduces a lot more complexity, because now I have three more choices every turn.
Mm-hmm.
Alternatively, at the beginning of the game, you could pick one character to represent all of yours, and the way you would do that is you would stack the cards, so you'd be able to see that I'm the thief, I'm the paladin, and I'm the necromancer, but you put the necromancer on top, because that's the power you want, so I can see all three of my symbols, which corresponds to my symbols on the board, mm-hmm. but I can only read the power of one. That said, my third idea was, I pick which one I want to start with, and when I use that power, it goes to the bottom, and now the next, so I basically pick my starting order, and then every time I use a power, I have to swap to the next one. Those are my three choices.
Okay.
Unless you have other ideas.
I have another idea. So each character has a specific type inherent to them?
Yes, and they not on the character card.
Okay.
That character has one extra of that type in the game, but it doesn't affect anything else. Okay. It's more thematic than anything.
Well, let's assume that you were going to give each character a specific type.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So my thought is that you have an active character kind of acting as the leader for that round.
Mm-hmm.
And that means, say the thief, his type is coin. So while he is your active leader, and he can be the active leader for as long as you want, while he is active, then you can use the powers on tiles in his faction or any other coin tiles that you have out.
Mm-hmm.
But anything that's nature or whatever the other magic, you can't use those powers unless they're in his faction. And then at the end of your turn, so he has no inherent power on his own, but at the end of your turn, then you decide if you want to keep the thief for the next turn, if you want to change to a different character for the next round. And it's kind of like, in video game terms, it might be like changing your stance or something, your attack stance,
right,
your combat
right.
stance or something like that. So it's, you're making a decision this turn for what powers you're going to have available to you on your next turn. But in between there, your opponent is going to take their turn. Their opponent is going to see what you're going to be able to do next time and strategize accordingly.
So what about for passive powers? Passive powers would just always be working, or they would only be active if you're...
I think it depends on the power, or that could even be a feature you programmed into the passive power.
Okay.
You can maybe even have passive powers that have no inherent type.
Okay, I see. Oh, gosh. Yeah.
But I mean, that. So I don't know what all you have in mind for passive powers, how much that might break it. I mean, you might just say that passive is always passive.
Yeah, and that, I mean, you powers. Can't take active powers that... And I like that you pick at the end of your turn, because that way... it should give you less AP, right? Because at the beginning of your turn, now you're like, oh, crap.
Yeah,
and that should help other people know how to plan.
Yeah.
I don't hate that idea. I don't necessarily love it, but it's worth but it's worth trying. So what I'll probably do is I'll go ahead and add that symbol to it and then know that I could play it both ways over the weekend.
Sure.
So it'd be easy enough to do. There are 12, there are 3, so 4 each. So that works, meaning like there are 3 mm-hmm. symbols, so give... one each. Now the only... Okay, so another twist on that then is when you build your... And this is good or bad. When you build your group,
mm-hmm.
you're going to need to have one of each.
Yeah.
Because you don't want to have two of each, because that would suck because you're missing one then, right? see what I mean? Because you only have 3 characters.
Mm-hmm.
So if you have 2 coins and a magic, you can't use nature tiles, which your person has nature tiles. So...
well, you could use,
but I mean, you couldn't use their abilities, which could be crippling in the game.
Well, that's why I say you can, like, so your thief is active, you can use any coin tiles that are out there, but you could also use the magic and the nature tiles that came with him.
Oh, okay.
You just couldn't use nature or magic tiles from any of the other 2 factions that you brought in.
Fair enough. I get you. Okay.
So you could build a deck with... Or build a set with
all 3 coins.
All 3 coins, knowing that
right.
all of your coins are always going to be available to you, but the other ones you're going to have to decide when it's best to use them.
Right. Okay.
Which could be kind of like a power play sort of thing.
Well, yeah, because it kind of been maxing, right? Because
yeah,
theoretically,
yeah.
there are more coin tiles in those three groups.
Right.
But you also have to remember then that you're also very weak to people with coin powers, right? So if they can do something to coin tiles and they don't have it, that is worth a try. I will add that to the cards so that I have that as an option. And then I'll play test it both ways. I do like, because it's less powers to worry about.
Yeah.
And frankly, that's then 12 more powers that if we needed more tiles, I could just add to them, right, later.
You could also, for a learning game, just play without the characters.
True. Yep. Yep. But that does add a little something else.
It does.
Right.
It also adds, makes you care that much more about placement.
Right. Right, right.
Because, and when, you know, this round having this tile here is going to be really good for me, or maybe I'm thinking three rounds down the road, I want this tile to be here because I'm going to planning to use it later.
Right,
but
right.
I don't know. Anyway, it adds a lot of
it does. Decision cool. making. No, thank you. So, I think I'm going to probably, actually, I'll make two versions so that's not confusing.
Okay.
You know, one with just the two symbols and one with the symbol and the power. Because I already made that one, so I might have... and the other note is, so it can be a four-player game. Then it's... So the idea is the board would just be double-sided. Because that's...
Oh, okay.
That's not that big of a deal, I know, for printing. Because I can't not think about how publishers would do things. So the other side would be 6x6. But then you'd each have a slot. So there'd be, you know, an 8 crosshair, basically. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
The one thing I'm trying to figure out is if you would play solo or if you would be on teams. Part of me thinks you might be on a team to where you were trying, you know, I think it would try both ways.
Yeah.
A three-player match would be easy to just do solo, but in a four-player match, does that get too chaotic, right?
It might.
And then you've got people ganging up on each other maybe too much. So that I have to check.
Mm-hmm.
But as a two-player game, I know it works. I know it works. And as a three-player game, I'm completely confident that it works.
Mm-hmm.
As a four-player, I just thinking team may be a little better. And of course, whenever you place a tile, it's got your symbol on it, but you're also facing it towards you so that you can read it. So that is an easy trigger way to show somebody, hey, look, this is my tile. So, all right. We're about out of time here, so I'm going to stop there.
Okay.
Yeah.
Cool. Well, I'm glad you're getting back to that game.
Yeah, me too. Me too. And I'm going to play it with Mark this weekend just so he can see it, you know, and he's of course under no obligation. Obviously if he didn't want it, I would have to change the theme.
Of course.
Duh. So from there I would probably just figure out a different theme because I certainly wouldn't want to, I don't think using the fantasy themes aren't that exciting to me except for Run Real Estate because of the art, because of that world.
Well, because you helped build that world. Right. Yeah. Sure. I get you.
Yeah, okay. But I'm going to try it out with him, and you know, Mark, publishing a game or not gives really good feedback, so he's a great playtester, so I'm excited for that, and a couple other guys will be down there too, so should be good.
Right on.
Yeah.
All right, well, thanks everybody for listening to the show. If you want to get in touch with us, you can send us an email to buildingthegamepodcast@gmail.com. You can also call our Google voice number at 770-TEL-BTG. You can like us on Facebook and give us a 5-star review on iTunes. If you want to follow us on Twitter, Jason is at J.A. Slingerland. I am at poorly_designed. The podcast is at podcastbtg. You can buy our games. Go to thegamecrafter.com where you can get copies of all of my games. You go to buildingthegamepodcast.com to get a copy of Water Balloon Washout. And Amazon.com, you can find a copy of Saloon Tycoon for your very own. And soon, somewhere, you can certainly get a copy of Unreal Estate.
I think you can buy them off the Grand Gamers Guild website. Okay. And we may also have them on our website soon. So
yeah. Very cool.
Yeah.
All right. Just choked on nothing. Sorry, builders, I'm choking, and I'm not going to ask Jason to play a game because I'm going to die. So, bye-bye.
Good night.
Building the Game is a co-production of Imminent Entertainment and Poorly Designed Studios. All of the ideas presented by Rob and Jason are property of the Building the Game podcast. Next time on Building the Game.
1, 2, that sounds better. How's it sound to you?
Yes.
It's okay, it's okay, it's okay, it's okay, it's okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay, okay, okay. Anyway.